Welcome to Faith and Family, a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. And now from Greenville, South Carolina, here's your host, Steve Wood.
Hello, this is Steve Wood, and welcome to Faith and Family. Thank you for joining us today for episode 68 of the new Faith and Family, and we're in the midst of a new series entitled How to Prepare Catholic Youth for Life in a Homosexual Culture. When we began this series, I outlined how our culture is going to be experiencing a homosexualization of the American people, and that not just the spread of same-sex marriage, but this is going to be infecting all types of institutions, especially families. It's going to be infecting churches. It's going to be infecting businesses. In fact, dozens of businesses, I just found out in the last week, are petitioning the U.S. Supreme Court to legalize same-sex marriage. Then I moved to the second edition in this series, and I described how natural law alone as a strategy to oppose homosexual acts in our culture, the legalization of them and same-sex marriage, isn't adequate. I didn't say there was anything wrong with natural law, but using natural law alone isn't working in the sense that practicing Catholics of the latest poll show that majority, 57%, of practicing Catholics are in favor of same-sex marriage, and overall, Catholics are 5% worse than the general population. And if we're generally using natural law arguments to oppose this, something isn't going right. We've just lost the majority of our own people. So if natural law alone isn't working, even among practicing Catholics, then the question is, what will? And what will work, we turn to the most important letter in the history of the world. And that letter is St. Paul's epistle to the Romans. In a way, if you could hear my voice, I hope you hear this is St. Paul's epistle to Roman Catholics today, not just in the first century. This is an extremely important epistle. And right up front in this epistle, we're going to find a truth that can literally transform the way we approach trying to convince our children, our own people in the church, and the wider culture of the truth of the Christian faith. Now, you should know that in Paul's epistle to the Romans, the last half of the first chapter is the most comprehensive and explicit treatment of homosexual conduct in the Bible. And just so you know, for those who are advocates of homosexual behavior, both inside and outside the church, this passage in Romans 1, the last half of Romans chapter 1, is the most problematic scripture for them. In other words, it's the toughest one to refute. Now, the passage that we're talking about in Romans chapter 1 covers verses 18 through 32. And I'm going to be doing broadcasts on these verses, but I'm just going to give you a real quick summary of them today. What Paul does in Romans 1, 18 through 32 is that he describes the Gentile world and their descent, so to speak, into homosexual behavior. But how did they get there? Well, it started, A, from turning away from their Creator. B, surprisingly, after turning from the Creator, they descend into idolatry. And then C, from idolatry, they descend into licentious sexual behavior. And then finally, D, homosexual and lesbian acts. And Paul is basically giving you the depravity of the Gentile world. But in looking at this passage, where basically he's showing the descent of the Gentiles into darkness, sin, depravity, and homosexual acts, you want to get the big picture of what he is doing in the epistle to Romans. Let me give you an illustration. It may not be a good one, but if you ever watch the TV cop show, Blue Bloods, very often it's a New York Irish Catholic family that are policemen, several generations of policemen. But when you watch Blue Bloods, the first shot you see is that kind of pulled back wide angle shot of New York City. And then the camera tightens up and you get a shot of the Reagan's home. Now we're coming closer to the point. And then you go inside the home and you see close up of family members. Well, I just showed you the close up shot, so to speak, of the Gentile world. And that's Romans 1, 18 through 32. But you want to also have the wide-angle shot of what Paul is doing in Romans, and it's this. Very important. In Romans 1, he's showing how the Gentile world is exceedingly sinful and unrighteous. You've heard of justification by faith. Justification means to be made righteous. So Paul, before he talks about how people get made righteous, he's saying how the Gentile world is unrighteous. That's Romans 1. Romans 2, then St. Paul goes after the Jews and showing how they have also become sinful and unrighteous. And then starting in chapter 3, he shows about the way God has provided for all the world, Jew and Gentile, to become righteous. Now, here's my point, and this is a pretty important point. In Romans 1, St. Paul isn't just condemning homosexual acts. He certainly was doing that, but he wasn't just doing that. He was doing much, much more. He wanted to show how God was going to save, to transform and to make righteous a Gentile world that had fallen into the pits of denying their Creator, engaging in idolatry, and sexual degeneracy. Do you understand this? It's not just condemnation. Paul was showing how bad the Gentile world was, but he's also going to show how you can pull the Gentile world out of that. Now, again, I showed last week how natural law alone isn't keeping even the Catholic world from embracing the legalization, for instance, of same-sex marriage. Where's the source of power to pull out of that? Well, there are two verses often overlooked before you jump into the passage describing the Gentile turning from their Creator, their idolatry, and their sexual licentiousness, and their homosexual and lesbian acts. Two verses before that passage describes how God is going to do that. And these two verses are so important. If you're a parent listening, saying, well, I'm not interested in the Bible, I just want to keep my kids from becoming homosexuals, listen to me. If you're a parent, you can turn to psychology to try to find something that will keep your kids on the straight and narrow. If your kids are acting up, you can go to certain behavioral techniques, and that can help you manage the household and the family. And all these things are good. But in today's world, what you need, in addition to psychology and some behavioral tips, is theology. You need to be able to tap in to the very power of God to keep your children from being overwhelmed by a return to paganism by our contemporary culture. And these two verses, Romans chapter 1, verse 16 and 17, has the answer. Here we go. St. Paul says, quote, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God for salvation to everyone who has faith, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it, in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed through faith for faith. As it is written, he who through faith is righteous shall live." Now listen, he says the gospel has the power of God for salvation, including the Greek. Now, in the next verses, he goes on to describe the Greeks, the non-Jews, and they're turning from God as creator, from going headlong into idolatry, to going into sexual licentiousness, to falling into homosexual acts. That's how these people are going to be saved. It's by the power of the gospel. And it's in the gospel, in some dramatic way, that the power of God is therefore revealed. Now, remember again how I showed you last week how the natural law alone isn't powerful enough to keep our culture and even Catholics, practicing Catholics, from being deluded from what's going on through the homosexual acts in our culture. So, what do we turn to? It says that the gospel is the power of God, even for the Gentiles in this situation. How do you think the Roman Empire went from being a pagan empire to a Christian empire? It was the power of the gospel. I don't like to throw around Greek words, but this is one you need to know. This word power in Greek is dynamis. We get the English word derived from this Greek word of power, dynamis, dynamite. St. Paul was saying this is explosive power. When you begin announcing the gospel, the power, the dynamite power of God is unleashed. Now, how powerful is this dynamis? Well, I want to go now to the very opening verses of Romans. Now we're going to really drill down, and the opening verses kind of tell it all that you're going to find in this most important letter that was ever written in the history of the world. And by the way, I've been broadcasting for 15 years, and this is episode 68 of our New Faith and Family. You may want to listen to this broadcast a number of times, because what you're going to hear in the next few minutes may be new to you, and it should be just as old as the first Roman Catholic Church. This should be so common, so well known, but somehow we've read over it. So we're going to go right to the beginning of this epistle, Romans chapter 1 and verse 1. St. Paul introduces himself, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, set apart for the gospel of God. Paul realized that his destiny, God had made him and set him apart to be an apostle of the gospel of God. Remember, we just saw that it's in the gospel that the power of God was capable of reaching into the darkness of the first century pagan culture that included widespread homosexual and lesbian acts. The gospel had the power for that. And so St. Paul says, set apart for the gospel, verse 3, the gospel concerning his son. He repeats the word gospel again, concerning his son, who was descended from David according to the flesh. Now, if you were Jewish, okay, if you were Jewish, God's son is talked about in Psalm 2. And Psalm 2 talks about David's son, the royal son of the house of David, being installed as king of the world. And it warns rulers of nations and kings to bow their knees and recognize the kingship of this son of David. And so in the first two verses, when Paul talks about the gospel, he's talking about the kingship of Jesus Christ over the world. And if you announce the gospel and keep the kingship of Christ out of the picture, well, you're going to need some vitamin fortification to whatever you're proclaiming and teaching, because the power of God somehow is unleashed in a way that's unknown to me, but through the power of God, when you acknowledge that David's son, David was the king of Israel, and the Messiah would be God's son, king of the world. This is two verses into the first epistle to the Roman Catholics in Rome by St. Paul. Verse 3, it says, "The gospel concerning his son, who was descended from David according to the flesh, and designated Son of God in power, according to the Spirit of holiness by his resurrection from the dead, Jesus Christ our Lord." Isn't Lord a nice name? We just throw that noun around like there's nothing to it. Lord means King of the world, King of civil governments. We don't go our own way. We have for 300 years since nation states arose and the Enlightenment. We just French Revolution and all kinds of type things. We've blown off Christ's kingship over nations. But God designated him the very Son of God. And that's not just referring to the divinity of Christ, it certainly is, but includes the kingship of Christ. Now, designated Son of God in power, dynamis, power. That's the same word we just read about, the power of the gospel in Romans 1, 16 and 17. So how are you going to get people who are in idolatry? How are you going to get people who have turned from even recognizing there's a creator, there's a natural design in the world God's made? How do you get people in the bondage of homosexual acts and lesbian acts out of it? You get them out by the power of the gospel. And the gospel has the ability to raise the dead from spiritual death, from bondage to sin, to life. It's the same power that rose Jesus from the dead after in a tomb for 3 days, when a simple fisherman can go to the empire of the entire world and proclaim a gospel that Jesus, the risen Son of God, is King of the world. Somehow or another, in that announcement, people are drawn in faith to Christ as they come to faith and baptism in Christ and bring allegiance to him. Their lives are transformed, and in the place of unrighteousness and sin, there's righteousness and obedience to Christ. That's the Christian message. That's the power of God. God's almighty power is evidenced when the full gospel, when I say the full gospel, I'm talking about the kingship of Christ, which is on the very essence of this. So I dare say it's time for Roman Catholics to return to Romans and start proclaiming and teaching and catechizing and homeschooling the gospel according to King Jesus. You know what a prophetic friend is? That's what I'm going to try to be in just a minute. A prophetic friend is a friend who's a good enough friend to tell his buddy he's doing something wrong, and he loves him enough to tell him rather than keep his mouth shut. There's a prophetic friend in the Old Testament. It was the prophet Nathan. The king David had just committed adultery and guilty of murder. And the prophet Nathan went to him to offer a correction because something was wrong. Now, folks, something is wrong in the United States when Catholics are leading the way in approval for the legalization of same-sex marriage. I realize that many of those Catholics aren't practicing Catholics, but nonetheless, they're leading ahead of the general population. How do you explain that? And that in the church, a majority of Catholics are approving of this stuff. So, as a prophetic friend of the Catholic faith, I'm going to put my finger on how I would diagnose what has led to this, and it's this. We're ashamed of the gospel. We're ashamed of the gospel that St. Paul said in Romans 1:16, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel. For it's the power of God for salvation, even to those Gentiles in the darkest sin." It's the power of God for salvation. Now, what's that gospel again? Well, Paul is writing to both Jew and Gentile. Remember, that's our kind of pullback shot of the whole epistle to Romans. And for those who were Jewish, saying Christ was the Messiah, saying Jesus Christ. Christ means Messiah. Messiah is the Jewish king that would throw off, eventually, the yoke of these Gentile rulers oppressing the Jewish people. And the hope from Psalm 2 is that David's son would become Lord. And Lord doesn't mean some religious thing we sing about and don't have any connection to the real world. Lord means that Jesus, among all nations, not just homes, not just hearts, not just sanctuaries, but nations, is king. And Jesus, now, since he rose from the dead, is the active sovereign king of this world, and not just of Israel or this or not, all nations. Now, what about the Gentiles? Because remember, the Gentiles were in a bad place. They didn't even recognize God as their creator. Well, hello, that's what's going on today. Idolatry, and I'm going to do a show on idolatry. Anyway, we don't worship idols, stones and stuff. Well, we worship the great I, the human ego, which is at the essence of idolatry. We'll get to that. We've certainly had our sexual revolution for at least a generation, and now we're talking about the highest levels of our government and courts legalizing homosexual acts. Okay, so what did the gospel and designated Jesus as Son of God in the gospel mean to a Gentile? Well, you're going to hear this during Holy Week as we're going through the Gospel of Mark this year. Mark 15:39, it says, when the centurion, now this was the Roman centurion, this was a guard over Jesus' crucifixion. So he's not an Old Testament scholar. He doesn't have the Jewish background that the Messiah would be king of all nations of the world. He was just a Roman soldier. And he stood facing him, and when Jesus breathed his last, this Roman centurion said, quote, truly, this man was the Son of God. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean when a Roman centurion, just your average guy, Roman soldier, says Jesus was truly the Son of God? Well, it meant one thing. Do you remember what they were doing in Mark 15 a little earlier in a chapter? They're putting a crown of thorns on him and mocking him. Hail, King of the Jews! What a joke! What a fraud! What a clown this guy is, thinking he's king! And then remember, there's a little sign they put over him. That was the charge of the crucifixion. This is the King of the Jews. And then when the Roman centurion said, wow, when he saw him die, this guy really was the Son of God. Well, for a Roman, there was one Son of God. His name was Tiberius Caesar. There was one Lord. His name was Tiberius Caesar, son of the divine Augustus. Remember the coin they showed Jesus just a few chapters before this in Mark chapter 12? Guess whose image was on it? Tiberius Caesar. And what did that coin say? Son of the divine Augustus. So when the Roman centurion was saying, oh, this guy who we're making fun of and even clowning around put a sign over the cross and said, King of the Jews, this guy was. This guy is. There's somebody above Caesar. He's the Lord of the world, and we just killed him. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because in the Roman world, which the gospel of Mark was basically Peter's gospel that St. Mark recorded for us, and as he's going around Rome preaching, remember? The gospel was a royal announcement when there was a new Caesar ascending to his royal throne, king over the empire, the ruling empire of the world. There's now one above Caesar. And when you go about proclaiming a gospel like that in the first century, you were crucified, you were killed, you were persecuted. I wouldn't be surprised if we see this happen in the 21st century. is somebody has the courage to stick their head out of the foxhole and say, Jesus truly is the Son of God. He truly is Lord and King, not just of hearts and families and sanctuaries, but of civil governments, including ours. Now, just to go a little bit further on this, you think, Steve, where'd you just cook this up? Why did you just cook this up? If you want a place to really get this, there's a papal encyclical by Pope Pius XI. It came out in 1925, and it's basically been ignored since then, called Quas Primus. And in Quas Primus, you can find the kingship of Christ articulated with utter clarity. It was by Pope Pius XI, and you can find this encyclical on the EWTN website. Quas Primus says, the whole of mankind is subject to the power of Christ, nor is there any difference in this matter between the individual and the family or the state. For all men, whether individually or collectively, are under the dominion of Christ. With God and Christ excluded from political life, an authority derived not from God, but from man, like from we the people, the very basis of that authority has been taken away. The result is that human society is tottering to its fall because it no longer has a secure and solid foundation. In public and private life, we need to proclaim Christ is King. Thanks for listening to Faith and Family, Episode 68. I'm your host, Steve Wood. Visit us at dads.org. You might want to get a copy of this broadcast for your family. God bless.
Faith and Family is a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. Visit us online at familylifecenter.net. To order a CD copy of today's broadcast, order online at www.familylifecenter.net.